Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. Hey, ladies.
Good morning.
Hello.
And we are your primary selection team here at Capillary District Libraries. So we're finally sunny again. We're a little well into May in our taping schedule, but this has been so... So we're finally back to sun again, at least briefly. Are today looking at Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month titles. That was where we wanted to go. Want to jump right in this time?
Absolutely.
Alrighty,
yeah.
Cool.
I think one of the things Jessica and I were just talking about the other day is reading this year. It's hard to believe we're almost 6 months into the year.
Yeah.
And I am hung up on wanting to read titles from last year and the year before.
Oh, yeah.
And I have this goal by the end of the year to read a certain number of new titles. And it's not that the new titles aren't fantastic. It's that I'm stuck on the ones I didn't read from the last 2 years. So my first book is actually one of those. I really wanted to read it. Just as we all know, you get these piles of books. Your listeners can relate to this, and you just can't get to them all. So I finally did, and this one is called I Belong Here, A Journey Along the Backbone of Britain by Anita Sethi. And this is a memoir about a woman who lived in northern England, and she was the victim of a hate crime on a train. And she's of Asian, East African, and Caribbean heritage. And in this book, she starts at that moment with the hate crime and actually was prosecuted and was prosecuted well. And so she went through that process, but she was deeply shaken, had, you know, PTSD from it, and goes on this journey to sort of reclaim her dignity, reclaim the feelings of safety in her body, and to reclaim the fact that as a brown woman in England, she can be there, and she's mm-hmm. allowed to be in nature. She's allowed mm-hmm. to be in rural areas, and that she can do this journey. So she goes on the Pennines, which is the backbone of Britain. It's beautiful, mountainous, gorges, all these different natural landscapes. She travels with a companion for a small amount, but then she goes on her own, and it becomes this journey. Not like Wild, but in that book, Wild by Sherrod Strayed, but a little bit like that, where you're on your own, it's painful, it's scary, there's getting lost, but that journey helps her reclaim her space. And there's a lot about racism in England, which was haunting and chilling, and just about this healing power of nature, these ancient landscapes, and this assertion of the right to belong in nature. And also a reclamation of the North, which is a part, Manchester, which is a part of England that isn't always painted with a really positive light. And that's her heritage and her hometown. So it's that reclamation of that too, and a feeling of pride being from Manchester. So just a really, really incredible book. I Belong Here by Anita Sethi.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Maddie?
So I've got a couple books I want to bring up that kind of feature... I guess heroes in some way. The first one is Fall Down Seven Times, Stand Up Eight, Patsy Takemoto Meek and the Fight for Title IX. It's written by Jen Bryant, and it is illustrated by Toshiki Nakamura. And I actually learned about this book back when I was, you know, looking up titles that I wanted to read and highlight for Women's History Month. But Patsy... Wow, what an incredible woman. She was born in Hawaii, and at a young age, like, her parents instilled in her this very fierce, I can do it spirit. And there's a Japanese proverb that says, fall down seven times, stand up eight. And she was someone who was very driven growing up in Hawaii. She wanted to become a doctor, but medical schools wouldn't accept her because she was a woman. So she then applied to law school, and she did get in, but then had trouble getting jobs, which was also of that time period, back in the 40s, 50s. Finally, in 1965, I think it was, she became the first woman of color elected to the U.S. Congress. And she was someone who really fiercely fought for all sorts of causes. But one that really stands out and is highlighted in this book is the Title IX law that, I think it focuses on women being able to pursue sports and that sort of thing. And it is to a great extent that. But right now I'm thinking of Brittany Griner. I don't know if you guys know. She's, I think, still stuck in Russia. She has been detained. And she is, like, very likely the greatest female basketball player on the planet. She's just amazing. And I look at her and I think she is a recipient of the Title IX initiative law. And basically it was about lawmakers being kind of afraid that too much money would be devoted to women and girls and would be taken away from the men's sports. And she, I'm looking at my friends here in the room who are just kind of like, oh my gosh, right? But just really fighting for the opportunity to play sports, because as we all know, and I have friends today who encourage their young boys and girls to play sports, because if you're really good, you can get a scholarship to university. And that's a big deal for a lot of families to be able to get to university on some sort of a sports scholarship, any kind of a scholarship, because we know that, you know, usually a university degree opens doors. But anyway, she is just the way she fought, the way she worked with her community to constantly just keep going, even when, you know, people told her no, even when people said, no, that's just not acceptable at this time. I'm happy to promote that one today. The other one I want to talk about is Yes, We Will, and this is by Kelly Yang, Asian Americans Who Shaped This Country. And this is kind of a compilation of lots of different Asian Americans who are in the U.S., who grew up here, who were born here, and really influenced our country. And it sort of starts out with like some grim reminders, which, you know, we need to hear, right? That a long time ago, Chinese American immigrants were building the Transcontinental Railroad, mm-hmm. but then there was like this Chinese Exclusion Act. This was in 1875 that kind of, you know, closed a lot of doors for citizenship, for being able to participate in certain things. So slowly you could see all the different people who are just beginning to stand up here. So the kind of people who are featured here, Jeremy Lin, I don't hear about him very much, but I know he also played basketball. We've got Jenny Han, Hello, The Summer I Turned Pretty, is featured here. Franklin Chang Diaz, an astronaut. Even Tammy Duckworth and our vice president, Kamala Harris. All of these persons have some Asian American heritage. And I really like that there's just a reminder of these people. Mamie Tape was someone who fought for an end to school segregation, because there was that, is that, and maybe in some places, at least maybe not in name, but in practice. So, yeah, those are the two books I want to recommend.
Excellent.
Okay. The first one I want to talk about today is actually Time is a Mother by Ocean Vuong. This is Vuong's second collection of poetry. It's quirky. It's heartbreaking, and it's just amazingly crafted. It very much circles around the loss of his mother from cancer, his relationship with his longtime partner, and on some level, it's a reckoning with the violence in our world. In language, as a grandchild of the Vietnam War, as a refugee, as an observer, it's all good, but things like that. Pieces like Not Even, or there's a poem titled Amazon history of a former nail salon worker, and it's just heartbreaking. It's just you're working through, you can see what's happening to the person just by the order, the cart. And it relates back to his mother's cancer diagnosis. And reasons for staying, they're all stuck with me for different reasons. It's a really moving collection that I think it's accessible, and I think everybody should pick it up.
Yeah. That is on my list, Jessica. Absolutely.
So you want to go on with this?
Sure. My next one is another book from the past. Okay, so I collect these. This is one of those TBR on the tower. I keep moving it up and down. So I finally got to it. Lisa Sees the Island of Sea Women, a novel. And this is one of those historical fiction pieces that really shows you how much the conflicts that we often hear about World War II through a European perspective, right, or through an American perspective. And this shows not only World War II, but the Korean War and other historical conflicts through the perspective of people who live on an island named Jeju, a Korean island. And these women are, the women that on this island are called the Henyo, and they're part of a diving collective that goes way back. And it's a matrifocal society where the women are the breadwinners. They go and they dive. They free dive without any equipment. They catch seafood. Often they don't even eat much of the seafood themselves because it's too costly. They need to sell it. Mm-hmm. The men stay home and take care of the babies. It's a sort of pagan religion aspect. There are shamans and that sort of thing. And it's passed down, the power is passed down through the women, although there's something about the sons too. You know, it's not a utopia, but it was a matrifocal society, and it does continue, although the members have really dwindled. And so this book takes place from the 1930s all the way till 2008. So our main character is Young Sook, and it goes all the way until she's about 85. And she has lived through World War II, the Korean War, and something very horrific called the Jeju Massacre, which happened after World War II. And this book takes you intimately into the story. A little trigger warning, it takes you intimately into the Jeju Massacre, where she has lost family members, and it was extremely violently and rawly rendered. It really will shake you. But I think that was done on purpose. It might look like a light book. It has a beautiful cover. It isn't. And it opened up the door for me to really think about the Asian experience and want to learn more about this. It's also about friendship and about choices that are made in friendship that can break a friendship, and how can that be rebuilt and can it not when something really terrible has happened to break a friendship. So an extremely, my favorite word, powerful, but it really is an extremely powerful story. I won't forget it. And it really launched me into more research. You know, mm-hmm. What is this? And also made me think, why didn't I know about this?
Right.
This happens so much. And historical fiction, I'm not the fiction selector. I don't read that much fiction, but historical fiction can be such a portal. And every time I read something like this, wow, you know, I'm just utterly captivated and want to know more. And want to know, there's a wonderful children's book about the women, the Henyo, mm-hmm. and I read that to my daughter, you know, just to expose her to it a little bit too. Sure. So just a fantastic, very a cool. Really, really good book. So,
Maddie, you've got one more.
Sure.
Right?
Well, speaking of historical fiction,
right?
I have A Troublemaker by John Cho, and this is a middle grade novel. Features some, I guess you could say, junior high or middle school kids, but also some high school characters as well. And this is the story about Jordan, a Korean-American boy living in Los Angeles. And we're talking about 1992, April, and the setting for the whole book is the day that the police officers that were filmed beating Rodney King, if you remember, were acquitted. And just the aftermath of the response of the community, rioting, and just very much a dangerous situation in downtown or in Los Angeles. So Jordan is the second of two children. He feels very much like he just doesn't measure up to his sister, who is a star student, star child in the family. And he kind of does get into trouble in that, you know, he's having trouble with school. He's making some naughty decisions with friends, just going out. And he definitely feels a sense of, like, isolation with his parents. His, let me see if I have this correct, Oma and Appa. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story of this Korean family. The parents have come to try to make a better life for themselves in California. And Grandpa lives with the family. And it's kind of an adventure in that the night that this happens, with the, you know, the day of the police officers getting their not guilty verdict, he goes off with a friend, and they're basically trying to get to the store because the father, the mother and father own a party store. I think that's the type of store it is. And the father has gone off to protect the store by boarding it up. And Jordan thinks that if he gets a gun to his father, that will raise his sense of esteem in his father's eyes, because he does think that his father looks down upon him because he's getting into trouble, not doing well in school. There's definitely a tense relationship there between the father and Jordan. So it's this adventure, really, of him getting a hold of a gun that the father had purposely brought home because there had been other incidents going on in the Korean community involving guns that, you know, he just made up his mind that I don't want to have this in my store anymore. I don't want to be a part of this. So he hid it. And Jordan took the gun with no plan to use it, no bullets, anything like that. But he thought that maybe if his father had it, it would protect his father, but also it would raise the esteem that he holds in his father's eyes. So it's this adventure of, like, from one thing after another, trying to get from one part of town to another, hitching a ride, finding people to give them rides, and also friendship. Like, you see the friend that he's traveling with, and his friend has no idea that this is what they're about to do. And when he finds out, he's like, oh my gosh, why do you have this? Just a gorgeous, gorgeous book. I think I really liked it because it gave me that little inside look in Korean culture, Korean American culture. I'm forgetting the word when you are in a place, the karaoke culture, foods, you know, why Grandpa lives with them. It's really a neat story. I liked it a lot.
And that's John Cho, who is the,
yes,
the actor.
Yes, and by the way, John Cho, yes, the actor, I think director too.
Yeah.
Definitely major, major star power. And I think it's his first novel. He did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah.
Okay, so I think I've got a couple more. One that I do want to cover, and actually I've kind of been sitting on because I wanted to have it for API month, is Portrait of a Thief by Grace D. Lee, L-I. This is a debut novel. She blends a heist novel with a really introspective literary take on the Chinese diaspora, colonialism, and colonialism, especially within art. An art history student is at a museum that is robbed, and in the process of the robbery, somebody slips something in his pocket, and he's basically recruited to steal 5 priceless pieces of looted art taken from the Imperial Palace. And he decides he's going to try it. So he, you know, like the movies, he gets together his archetypical crew. You know, you've got your con artist, you got your driver, you got your hacker, and your thief. This is all college students that either he or his sister knows, each with their own complicated relationship with China. So I think only one of them was actually born there. Everybody else is a generation removed. But they all, you know, they don't fit there, they don't fit here, they're not, it goes back to the... you know, in your head, I belong here, but nobody else seems to think I belong here. It's all, where are you from? Mm-hmm. But it is one of those They all have a complicated relationship with China, their families, and each other. And it's, I mean, it is both the, we need to get in and out of these five different giant museums to get these artifacts out. But it's also somebody having a deeply introspective relationship with their father, who happens to be like FBI or Interpol type person dealing with art theft, which, mind you, is why his son is so, you know, appropriate to have on this crew, because he's learned a bit from his dad. But it's really interesting. It's she balances the two for me well enough. And I'd be really interested to see what else she's written, what else she does next, because it's interesting to see whether they can even pull it off. Mm-hmm. There are other people trying it, wow. And they're a little too smart for their own good in some ways. I mean, they're college students, overly smart college students, but college students. So it's a fun book that way. And then the other one I have is much, much lighter. It's Under Lock and Key by Gigi Pandian. This is the first of the Secret Staircase mysteries. Mm-hmm. It features Tempest Raj. She's a stage magician from Las Vegas. So big shows, but something's happened. Her career's in jeopardy. There's been an accident, and she's gone back home to her parents. Well, she kind of is waiting to see what's going to happen. And she doesn't want to get sucked back into the family business, which is the Secret Staircase Construction Company. And, you know, it's the people that, you know, the bookshelves that flip out or the secret passageways and the, those types,
like, literally.
Of things. Literally secret. Yeah, I mean, they do more, but that's what they specialize in.
I think I need one of those.
So, what, exactly. What if there was more space in my apartment? One day she's visiting a work site and the company is opening a wall for the first time in like a century in this old house. But within it, they find the body of her former stunt double, who she suspects had caused the problems that have landed her back at home. So both to, you know, make sure she's not implicated in the crime and to find out who was, she starts investigating because, of course, it's a cozy-ish. Mm-hmm. So is Tempest a suspect? The intended victim? Is this all part of a family curse that she doesn't really want to believe in because her mother disappeared under weird circumstances and was also a stage magician? So it's fun, interesting, got family members that are part of the story, a pet, because, you know, of course, there's going to be a really neat pet. and I actually, I had discovered Gigi Pandian back when she started her Accidental Alchemist series, which featured a modern-day alchemist, an herbalist slash herbalist in Portland, and a living, breathing gargoyle. Desperate to stay animated, thinking the alchemist can help him, but he's, oh, by the way, a master of French cuisine. So she does some really interesting mashup mysteries that I have enjoyed.
Awesome.
That sounds like a fun one.
It does. It sounds really, really fun. I believe I have the last book today.
You do. I think you do.
I haven't done a cookbook in a little while, so I have Under Coconut Skies, Feasts and Stories from the Philippines by Yasmin Newman. And Yasmin is a Filipino-Australian author. And her first book was called 7,000 Islands. And this book is her second book about the Philippines. And she really laments in the introduction to the book that there really aren't that many Filipino cookbooks. And there isn't that much focus on Filipino cuisine among the other Asian cuisines that have become popular, you know, in the United States and other countries. And so this book is a combination of a lot of narrative storytelling about culture, about family, gorgeous illustrations, just absolutely beautiful. And then, you know, weaves into the cultural influences of the cuisine of the Philippines, which are vast, as you can imagine. And some of the recipes are... You know, it's not a vegan cookbook. I always like to say that just in case our listeners are vegetarian, vegan, but there are vegetarian recipes in it, but there's a huge mix. And she says, talks about how Filipino cuisine is really about nature, and it's extremely reflective of the islands of the Philippines. And some of the recipes that I pulled out, I always like to talk about a few of them because they sound so delicious, are egg noodles with charred tofu and Asian greens. And again, it just looks gorgeous. Pumpkin curry with young coconut and these snake beans. So basically just any beans would work for that, but snake beans are special. Candied calamansi cake, which is orange,
a citrus fruit. For everybody, this is really pretty.
Isn't it gorgeous? Yeah.
She's showing us pictures.
Smoked coconut rice with eggplant.
Ooh.
As you can tell, I'm very into rice, but these dishes just look fantastic. But there's also a lot of meat. There's a lot of barbecue sort of oriented. There's a pig roast in here. So just a gorgeous cookbook. And again, on a more unique topic. So I wanted to bring that today, Under Coconut Skies.
Very cool. I think we've gone through again another episode.
Okay.
Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.